Welcome back to this week's episode of the Tech Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and as usual, I'm joined by Seth Winchell. How are you, Seth?
I'm well, Fred.
Awesome. So, if you've been following Electrek this week, you know that it was a huge week for EV news, especially with the Tesla Model 3s. We got a bunch of updates, especially what happened yesterday with the new mid-range. Also, for some reason, ton of news from Porsche on the Taycan, on a new version of the Taycan that has been greenlit, and charging news, a ton of very good news, actually, in the EV world. But let's start out with the Model 3. So the big news was Tesla released, well, started orders and announced a new version of the Model 3 with a mid-range battery pack.
Big surprise.
Yeah, it sort of came out of nowhere. Yeah, sort of came out of nowhere. The new pack start at $45,000 before EV incentives. And it has 260 miles of range instead of the 310 miles of range of the long-range pack based on the EPA standard. And a much lower top speed, too, for some reason, 125 miles per hour. We reached out to Tesla to know a little bit more about the model itself. So at first, some people speculated that it could be just a software lock pack, along the same long-range pack, which is about 75 kilowatt-hour capacity. Software lock to a lower capacity in order to just not change the production, but they confirmed that it's the same pack, but it's not software lock. It has fewer cells per module, so it's the same four module design pack architectures that Tesla launched with the Model 3, but fewer cells per modules.
So it could be lighter.
Definitely lighter for sure. Now. Also, yeah, another important thing that we should mention in terms of the system is that it came with sort of a price structure changes and option changes, mainly that the rear-wheel drive is now only available with this new mid-range pack. If you want a long-range pack, you're going to have to go with a dual motor system.
Or for the next week or so, you can special order the...
Yeah, that's something that they've been doing for a while now, like the off-menu thing you're mentioning.
Yeah, it's like when you go to In-N-Out and order... animal style, and
yeah. So I don't exactly sure how it works. You have to talk to your owner advisor. You cannot actually, because normally you have to go through the website, place your order, then you talk to an advisor. Or if you go to the actual store, it should be easier. They can arrange it for you. But yeah, you can still get it for about a week. So now, why Tesla released that new model? A bunch of speculation came out. The obvious thing is that it's a demand-creating move because every time you lower the price of a vehicle, you expand the market for it. And now it's $4,000 less than you could ever buy the Model 3 before, because the lowest you could get it before yesterday was $49,000.
So it's only $4,000 less, not $5,000.
Yeah, it's not a lot less. For 50 miles of range less.
Right. So, and also Tesla is kind of pushing the gas savings and the state and federal incentives like built into the price.
Yeah.
So people who are like, hey, it's only 33,000 or 34,000.
Yeah. So a lot of people have problem with that. They did that before with the Model S and X, and there was like a backlash about it. Were you on board with that, or were you against it?
The gas savings thing is a little bit arbitrary. The federal and state incentives also are kind of a little problematic because they said that if you ordered by October 15th, you're guaranteed that $7,500 federal tax incentive. And it's now beyond that. So you're not guaranteed to get the car, you know, at that $7,500 incentive rate. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to go over well.
Yeah, it's worse in this case for sure. I think it's a little bit better presented than it was when it was a real issue with the Model S, because you clearly get the full price at the bottom, like before savings that they said, and if after. It's just where you actually look to choose. If you look at the screen right now, you see on the side here, you can You can see each option with the price, with the little asterisk next to it saying that it's not the actual price. But at the bottom, you see the right price. I don't think that's ideal at all. I think you just should focus on the actual price that you're going to pay. And then find another way to promote the fact that, yeah, for sure, you're going to get some gas saving. And you should probably get access to at least a certain level of incentive that's going to reduce the overall price. But I don't know. I'm not completely okay with how it's presented right now. But I'm also not okay how it is showed as a way that a lot of shorts jumped on board on the fact that, oh, Tesla is running out of demand for the Model 3. That's a way to because they need more demand right now. I don't think that's completely true. The way I see it, there's actually a lot of demand for the Model 3 right now. It's still production constrained, though. And I think the main production constraint, as was confirmed by Panasonic a few weeks ago, is the battery cell production capacity at Gigafactory 1. There might be other bottlenecks too, but let's assume that the biggest one is battery cell production. If Tesla can actually sell a car with fewer cells in them, then they fix the bottlenecks without increasing battery cell productions. So that car alone, the option to having fewer cells inside a car, could increase the Model 3 production capacity at Tesla. So I think there is demand for that car, so that's why they created the option, and they can actually build that car right now and without increasing battery cell production.
And what do you think, so the long-range one is 75 kilowatt hours. I imagine it's like 60 to 65 kilowatt hours, the new one?
Yeah, that sounds about right. But
So it's a... For every six long-range cars, they can make, you know, eight or maybe more medium-range cars with the same amount of battery cells.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I didn't do the math. I want to do it after this podcast because I think that's something that people are just missing about the whole situation here.
Yeah, it would be good to have more information though on that, like.
Yeah, but
we can guess. I mean, it's also lowering the weight, so theoretically, you don't need as many kilowatt hours to propel it the same amount of miles.
Oh yeah, it should be more efficient for sure.
And we're talking about like beyond the Hyundai Ioniq type of efficiency, so it's kind of a new standard.
Yeah, well, the long range Model 3 came close, but not quite. This one could probably beat it. We're at least very getting pretty much the same to it, and we all been speculating for a while now that the base version of the Model 3 is most likely gonna become the most efficient electric vehicle out there, which will also make it the most efficient vehicle period, a passenger car, at least full-size passenger car. There are a few other changes with the design studio that came with the release of the mid-range one. Tesla changed the interior option. It's not black or white now. It's black or black and white. The interior itself, the white, what we used to know as the white interior, doesn't seem to have changed much, really. But Tesla is now calling the black and white interior, and it's available with every option now, including the new mid-range battery pack option.
Do you think that means there's going to be a full white interior coming up?
look at that white interior right now. I mean, how much more white you can get in there without looking like a clean room, like a lab or something. And the other change was the removal of the self-driving capability package from the design studio at the same time, first for the Model 3. Then later with the Model S and X, it was still up like a few hours ago. I'm not sure like they are phasing out, but it's going away from each version of the each models that Tesla sells. But like we were talking about the rear-wheel drive version for the long-range battery pack on the Model 3, apparently you can still order it as a off-the-menu item for the next week or so. The reason that Tesla gave is that there was some confusion about the option. No shit. They're selling a self-driving package that is, of course, not released. They've been doing that for 2 years, and it's still not available. So, yeah, it makes sense that some people were confused about it. But at the same time, what I found the most weird is that it just started to make sense to buy the self-driving package. It certainly didn't make sense to buy it 2 years ago, because you are now 2 years later and you just gave Tesla $3,000 or even up to $5,000. But when it first started, it was $3,000 for 2 years without getting really nothing out of it. Just the possibility to save another $1,000 if you buy it over the air whenever it comes online. But if you put an actual value amount on that, I'm not sure it's going to come up too much. But most recently, with the announcement that the new Tesla neural net computer, the very significant computer on grade that Tesla came up with, being linked to buying the full self-driving package capability that was first believed to just be a software update, is now actually a software update and a computer upgrade, a hardware update inside the vehicle. Now it made a little more sense. So you want the new computer, you need to buy the full self-driving full self-driving package, because the software can only enable new capacities if you have that kind of computing power inside the vehicle. So now I felt more like buying that option was sort of a pre-order on that computer.
It does feel like that now, but it also doesn't feel like Tesla had planned that originally. Like, it sounds like these are kind of coming together as events unravel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't the plan to have the... Well, it wasn't, because I remember vividly when the Autopilot 2.0 was announced that Elon knew at that point that they might need a computer on grade to get that capability. So it was always a possibility. They just weren't sure. And I assume that as the development of Autopilot came along, the enhanced Autopilot, the new version of Autopilot came along, they realized that to push the capability up to a level 4, level 5 of self-driving, they're going to need more computing power inside the vehicle. And that's why they actually made the computer, the Autopilot computer, easily accessible and easily upgradable. So it was always in the plan. And we say it's not... So if you purchase a car right now, it's available, but it's still in the Tesla account of an owner with an Autopilot 2.0 or 2.5. So if you go in your Tesla account, you can still order it as an aftermarket feature. As we've been talking for the past few months, that's an issue of its own, because Tesla changed the price of that, upgraded to $5,000, even when you bought the car thinking that it was going to be $4,000, and Tesla says that they're going to respect that price. But if you go on your Tesla account, for most people, as I understand it right now, it shows $5,000. So you're probably going to have to reach out to Tesla directly if you want to order that over the air. And get the rightful price.
Now, do you think that this had anything to do with the settlement, where Tesla had to pay back some of the folks that I don't know how much they paid per person, but there was a settlement.
$30 to $200 per person, depending when you order the feature.
Right. So, do you think that was part of the settlement to, like, hey, stop promising something that you don't know when you're going to be able to deliver? Or maybe it's part of the SEC thing that with Elon.
I don't think it's part of the SEC thing, because the SEC would only have an issue with if Tesla declared the money that they're getting for the feature as revenue, but I don't think they're doing that. So I don't think that's an issue. With the settlement, I remember reading one draft of it. I didn't read the final draft because I reported with another draft a few weeks before that. So. And my understanding was not much change. And I don't remember seeing anything about that inside. Tesla never admitted any wrongdoing with selling the feature. So the package, they only said that they admitted that they were late on the development and everything. So it was worth giving some money back to people. But that's it. So
I mean, that felt like a settlement, though.
It was a settlement. It was a settlement for sure.
But, so I wonder if that was part of the settlement, like an unspoken part or something.
Yeah, maybe unspoken, but it wasn't officially in the settlement itself. Did you ever did you go to the website and ask for your money back?
No, I'm on a lease, so I don't know if it works the same that way. Although I did get a message that I should go to the settlement.
You can opt out of the settlement too, and if you're more concerned about it and you think it's not fair, whatever, and you want to retain some option, because of course if you take the settlement, then that's really, you won't be able to do anything after that. But if you want to sue Tesla after or something, you should not take the settlement.
Right. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that either.
No.
Seems fine.
Yeah. The other news we just posted a few hours ago was the production numbers for the week. So I know it's not as exciting as it was last quarter when we were reporting on it. Is Tesla going to reach the 6,000 Model 3s a week? How many Tesla's going to deliver? Because it was going to be a record quarter. But we're still keeping an eye on it because there's supposed to be a production ramp up at this quarter. So we want to have a close look at it to make sure that we can catch it if it happens, on when it happens, or if it even happens. But for now, the only good news is that Tesla is able to maintain about 1,000 vehicle production per day, including close to 700-800 Model 3s. For the quarter to date, we are now at 12,200 Model 3s, 18,300 vehicles total. The last week was about 4,800 Model 3, so pretty close to 5,000, but not quite there yet. And 6,800 cars total, so about 2,000 Model S and X. Sorry, as usual.
Yeah, but it seems like they're consistently hitting this. You know, it's not like the end of the month or end of the quarter sprints. It's just a consistent 5,000 a week.
Yeah, it's certainly good for early in the quarter. Tesla never got that early in the quarter. And yeah, in terms of maintaining a high production rate, that's the highest production rate that Tesla has been able to maintain over several weeks. So that's been over 2 weeks for the quarter now.
And if your theory is right about the batteries being the bottleneck, mm-hmm. theoretically, then they can go to the next level.
Yeah, but that's 6 to 10 weeks, they said, that the production was starting on this car. Oh, well, they said the delivery, so maybe the production will start a little earlier. So, yeah, in the next first to 6 weeks, I think we should definitely start to see an increase in production. But even without, like, the last week of the last quarter, they did the record for the Model 3 for a single week, 5,300. So they can definitely get over 5,000 again. So that's something that we want to keep an eye on, too. But for now, it's not happening.
Yeah, hitting 6,000 will be a nice milestone.
Yeah, it was supposed to happen in last August. That was the goal. But thing changes. And now we're back to about 5,000 units. Yeah. The other thing that changed in the design studio that we just forgot to mention was the Model 3 Performance version got a little performance upgrade.
Yes, I don't think there's any physical upgrade to it.
No,
I think
there's no. they're not advertised at 3.3 seconds, 0 to 60. It used to be 3.5, so we asked Tesla, is it because something changed with the car? Tesla confirmed that nothing changed with the car, and the only reason that they did the upgrade on their marketing stuff is because some reviewers and publication were consistently getting 3.3 seconds acceleration times.
Or less.
Not for a while. They specifically mentioned like publications were getting 3.3. Yeah. Some owners have been getting less, but I don't think they've been getting less without some like new tires and new wheels.
Okay.
3.3, I think, is the best for stock, or maybe 3.2 something, but very close to 3.3. Of course, at the same time, that's related. Last weekend, I took my Model 3 to the drag strip so I could get some data of my own. And on the drag strip, I used the Draggy, which is a GPS-based performance tracker. And that's important stuff because Tesla is advertising now 3.3, but that's without the first foot rollout. My Draggy system calculates the first foot rollouts. And with that, I was consistently getting 3.5 seconds. So the 3.5 seconds time works, I think, very consistently, which is the right timing also if you want to calculate like the quarter miles time. Because my Draggy stats, all the stats were very, very close to the stats I was getting at the actual track with the system that they have at the track itself. So I'm very confident about those numbers. It was a fun day at the track, man. The Performance Model 3 is it's not a perfect car for drag racing. I mean, I got my ass handed to me by a bunch of different cars, but I also beat a few cars too that were even some souped-up vehicles.
There's Did any stock cars beat you? Any like?
I don't even think there were any stock cars there. No. I think I was the only stock car there. There was a bunch of modified vehicles, but street tires make a big difference. So I was on the stock tires and wheels too. That makes a big difference. And there was another few cars there with street tires, but they were also all modified. There was nothing really stock there, as far as I could tell. But I ran my fastest time. I ran an 11.89 seconds quarter mile, which is pretty good. Pretty consistent with what people have been getting to. There was one car there that I couldn't come close to beating. Instead, one time there was a false start on their part, and they lost control with one of the wheels wouldn't stick to the ground really. It was a Tesla and Chevy powered Honda S2000. If you're watching on YouTube, it's on the screen behind me.
It's interesting that all these Tesla modded cars use the Chevy Volt battery.
Yeah, it has a higher discharge rate. So if you want to get a really drag racing beast, it's the battery pack to go with. So people match the Volt battery pack with the Tesla drivetrain. So that's what they did. It's a very cool car that they came up with, and it's a collaboration of three different companies that are all doing some cool things in the EV world. So I think they deserve a shout out here. I'm talking about Véhicule Électrique Simon André. Those guys have basically an all-electric dealership. So they buy a bunch of EVs, they refurbish them, make sure that they're like new, and then they sell them, and they have a very... For an all-electric dealership, it's a pretty big dealership, and it's in Trois-Rivières in Quebec. So they're the one that bought the Honda S2000, and they team up with the Institut du Véhicule Innovant, which is a research and development group that works with a bunch of companies in Quebec, and they focus on electrification. So they have a bunch of similar projects. Excuse me. And they talked to me about a few things that they're working on. Now, I cannot share them yet, but they said that they're going to invite me soon and check out a few of their projects, which we're going to report back on electric. A few cool things there for sure.
Where are they based?
They are based in Saint-Jérôme, which is like half an hour north of Montreal. All
right.
And the third company, if you follow electric for a while, you already know about Jason Huge. A former company, normally... There was some issues with some of the partners, so now it's a new company. It's called 057 Technology, and it's still the same thing that he was doing before. So he's buying a ton of salvage vehicles, getting a bunch of Tesla parts together, and especially the drivetrains, which he refurbished. And he developed his own controller for it. So if you're doing an EV conversion, you can buy the... it's not just refurbished. Also, like for this one... This one was a rear performance drive unit from a Tesla Model S P100D, which normally I think it's like around 400 kilowatts of power, but he uncorked the power out of it, and he can get 475 kilowatts out of it now. So he can not just refurbish them, but uncork some power, and then he sell his own custom controller for it, which facilitate a whole EV conversion. Yeah.
We should go visit.
Yeah, for sure. They all got together and they did the whole conversion. They put a bunch of battery module from the Volt in the front with some sensors from battery temperature management. It's not just the Volt and the Tesla too. They also even got some from the Bolt, some parts from the Bolt. They got the chargers from the Bolt. The whole rear suspension and the old subframe for the drive unit in the back. They also use the Tesla, so and they managed to make it fit the Honda S2000.
The charger from the Volt is actually the same as the new Volt, I believe.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
This 7.2 kilowatt one, 32 amps, whatever. That was just upgraded by Chevy this year. So I think they just did it because they had the extra ones from the Volt. And why have two different chargers?
Yeah, it makes sense. And also, like, it almost doubles the charging rate, I think, of the Volt.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
Which is kind of sad because that's really slow. I mean, that's still two-thirds the speed of a Tesla.
Yeah. But for the Bolt, it's sad. But for the Volt, it's not as bad since you have a much smaller battery pack.
Yeah.
It's like 18.4 kilowatt hour. Yeah, and they did a bunch of runs during the day. And the best one they got was 0 to 60 miles per hour acceleration in 2.39 and a quarter mile in 10.24, which is insanely fast. I got to experience that. When I did, like, I knew it was going to be fast. Similar to like a P100D, which I experienced before, so I thought I was prepared. Put the back of my head firmly on the seat. Same thing for my bag. I thought everything was prepared. But when he did the launch, my ass still like lift up for like half an inch on the seat. I mean, the G-force is really impressive on that thing. And yeah, that's not the end of it too. It's probably the end for this year with the weather and everything becoming much colder and the snow coming, but they are going to keep working on the car, and they're going to come back next year, and they're pretty sure that next year they're going to get the car easily under the 10-second mark, which is going to be even more impressive.
You know, if we can digress a little bit, you mentioned that the two, you know, the basically the Model S P100D and this Tesla Chevy Volt hybrid in a Honda body, when they go 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds is like seriously jarring. Mm-hmm. So, and Tesla is going to put out this Roadster, which, you know, theoretically we're all going to get one, cause of referrals. Thank you everyone. But, that's going to be under 2 seconds, maybe even under 1.9 seconds. And I feel like that's not going to go over well with the general public. Like, you know, I'm not going to drive it like an idiot, I hope, but like people are. And like, I feel like 0 to 60 in that fast in under 2 seconds is like whiplash material. Like, are there going to be lawsuits? And so, are people going to drive off the side of the road because, you know, one tire is spinning and one isn't? That, you know, one has better traction? It seems kind of dangerous to have that much power.
Yeah, you're talking about the, like, sorry, my disconnected my headphones for a second. You're talking about the Roadster being the hands of like regular people and being
like you and dangerous. Like you and me. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I actually agree, and that's something that Guillaume from Simon André mentioned with his own car, which, like you said, is slow, is going to be slower than the Roadster. You said that he's gonna try to develop his own chill mode, like Tesla release. So I think Tesla's gonna have the same chill mode with the Roadster, and or maybe not a full chill mode, but something in between. So you're gonna have like
maybe a geolocated chill mode where you can't like do 0 to 60 1.9 seconds unless you're at a drag strip or something.
Yeah, that could probably seem. I think that would piss off a lot of people though. Yeah. But buying a car, but. I mean, there's certainly an argument for it, that kind of dangerous it'll be. But at the same time, I think it's going to be released at a time that hopefully the autopilot's going to have to improve so much that they could sort of implement active safety features that are even better than what's already in the car. So you could cut the power if there's any obstacle in front of you. Like, you could... some also like unwanted acceleration, like accelerating way too fast in a situation that you shouldn't. Maybe you could prevent that by just understanding the environment around the car. Things like that, I think, would make a lot of sense at this point. I mean, we're talking about a car that's coming in the... I'd be surprised if anyone... it's in the hands of customer within the next 24 months, right?
Yeah, I mean, also, these things don't often get delivered when they say they're going to be. So
yeah, well, 24 months would put in like in early late 2020. I'll be very surprised if that happens.
But I mean, they are coming theoretically, and like when they do come, it's to me, it's like because you know we do like we like the 0 to 60 when you take your family for the first time, and everybody's like, ooh, you know, like whatever. But I feel like this one's going to be like, oh, we have to go to the hospital now because your neck is, you know, injured.
Yeah, I mean, the G4 is going to be insane on that car. I mean, you've already experienced it, but...
Yeah, so that was the thing. He, the guy who was test driving it said, put your head back on the seat. And I, you know, was kind of like, okay. You know, he's like, no, I can't leave until your head is, like, making a dent in the seat. I was like, oh, okay. And then the rest of the time, I was just trying not to, you know, explode or hurt myself.
Yeah, that is going to be something, man.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it too. I mean, if there's any like backlash from it that's not good, I think it's gonna be dwarfed by the good impact it's gonna have on the V market. Like Elon, what did Elon say? Elon said like a smackdown, like delivering a big smackdown to gas powered cars.
And yeah, that's just it. That's over. Over for gas.
Other Tesla news this week that we're going to cover real quick. The Tesla stock got a old bumper here this week when the ACC settlement was officially approved by a judge. So there was some concern that it wouldn't happen, but mostly from the shorts, I think, because of Elon still trolling the SEC after officially accepting the settlement.
I think it's like also a psychological like barrier. Like, okay, it's over. Like this, you know, episode is over and behind, and now we can start focusing on this stuff.
Yeah, and now that the settlement is filed with the judge and filed back with the ACC, Tesla has like 45 days to pay the fine of $20 million fine. Elon Musk has to pay his own $20 million fine, and then they have like 90 days to find two new independent board members, a new committee to oversee Elon Musk's communication with investors, and also Elon needs to... Elon resigning from the chairman position, I think that's 45 days, not 90 days.
No. And when does he stop tweeting?
That's, I think, not stop tweeting, but the new committee overseeing it with presumably result... in him having a lower output of tweets, probably.
Yeah, we saw a tweet today that he tweeted something about the, you know, about the update, and then somebody on Twitter asked, you know, was it the meerkat? No,
the lemur.
The lemur, yeah. Is it the lemur? And that's typically a question that Elon would answer himself, and the Tesla Twitter account answered, which was was really strange. And I wonder if that's the SEC thing happening.
I just lost the power on my tablet for some reason.
Oh, I see the thing on the background.
Yeah, and I don't know why, because on here, I just came back. Really weird.
All right.
All right. The last thing. Oh, no, I did lose it.
So Musk is buying 20 million of the shares. And that's to compensate for the SEC settlement fine.
Yeah, well, officially it's not. So that's my presumption. And it's based on the fact that, well, the timing, first of all, they announced it at the same time that the amount. So the amount is the same, 20 million. They announced at the same time that Elon was buying the share. And finally, he's buying the share directly from Tesla. So Tesla is selling him the share instead of buying it on the market as he usually does. So it's him sending money to Tesla. Of course, it's not a clean $20 million that he gives to Tesla and Tesla pays the SEC with it, since he's getting shares in return. So shares have value itself. Technically, it's fair value. So Elon is not losing anything out of it, but I think symbolically it's him to compensate the company. So he compensates for the cash flow. Tesla is getting the $20 million. Tesla is having to pay $20 million to the ACC, but he's getting $20 million from Elon to sort of a secondary public offering of just 20 million shares, $20 million worth of share, I should say, because Elon already has 20 million shares. And yeah, so I think it's just like he knows that the only reason Tesla is having to pay this fine is because of what he said on Twitter. So Tesla shouldn't have to pay for it. But I think there has to be some regulatory limitation that make it so that he cannot just directly pay the fine for Tesla. So he does it like that sort of a curveball. Moving on, real quick, a quick update on the neural net computer that we mentioned about when we talked about the self-driving package. Elon updated us on the timeline for it with a six-month timeline now. So it should put the release around the end of Q1 and the beginning of Q2 2019. And he says that it increase the capacity from 500 to 2,000 percent increase in operation per seconds versus the current version of the computer.
So 5 to 20 times faster.
No. So he commented that in response to an article that we posted from an analysis from a TMC member. I don't have the article here for some reason, but I think his name is Jimmy D. He posted he's a deep learning expert, and he have access to the software from the neural net, a few iterations of it over the last year or so, and he posted a bunch of analysis about it, and then he posted one for the new version in V9, which is described as a much, much bigger neural net that Tesla ever deployed before. And he tried to sort of explain the size of it and the capacity of it and how much of an increase it was. And Elon commented on an article saying that it is a big increase, but it's like a 400% increase, which is lower than what Jimmy estimated. But also Jimmy said that it doesn't mean that he's wrong exactly. It's that there's a few different neural nets too, and they might not have been talking about the same one, because there's a neural net to train the neural net inside the car. So there's a bunch of different things. It's very complicated, but if you follow the article link in the next track, you can read this whole post, which goes into more details. But if you're not familiar with the deep learning community, you can get lost real quick in it. But yeah, some very, very good insights. Quick note about Tesla service real quick. Elon did a review of the service stations, the service centers around North America, and he figured out that there's a big discrepancy in terms of the gaps of the coverage of the service center, which he referred to as a foolish oversight. And now he announced a major expansion that will cover virtually all region of North America within the next 3 to 6 months. So that's an Elon time if you ever heard one, because...
Yeah.
3 to 6 months.
I mean, looking at the map, it kind of, they're big in the population centers, obviously San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York. There's a bunch. But like, where are you seeing, like, where is the big missing piece? I guess, you know, like,
I think it's the rural places. I mean, if you look at you look in Nevada, for example, like, should Reno have one? Like, Reno is a few hundred thousand people, right?
Yeah, Reno should have one, probably.
Yeah, Reno.
It looks like there's one in Sacramento, but that's not very close.
No, it's not. And there's a bunch of things like that, too. I mean, when Elon tweeted that, I asked one for this on the short show in Montreal, and people got back to me, hey, you have one in Montreal, you shouldn't complain, and whatever. Which, I mean, it's fair, sure.
That's
but,
true.
But at the same time, like, we just got one in Quebec City, which is going to help a little bit, but Quebec City is also like 2 hours away. But like, just me on the South Shore of Montreal, there's a ton of model of Tesla here on the South Shores of Montreal. And getting to Tesla on the island, even though it's like just less than 30 kilometers away, it can take like up to 2 hours. It took me 2 hours at one point to get there.
That's so, a Montreal problem, though.
But I mean, my point with that, it's not as much like, okay, that's an issue for sure. But then you look at other cities. Like, there's a bunch of other cities that are similar size to Montreal. Like, I mean, Metro Montreal, I don't know, it's like 3 million people, I think. Yeah, a bunch of other cities with of similar size, with not just one, but two or three
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of
service
like,
centers,
medium-sized cities in upstate New York, like you know, near Syracuse, Buffalo.
Yeah, Buffalo should get one, right?
Well, the problem is New York
one foot in the
dealership issue, so they're kind of limited to five.
Mm-hmm.
So all five of them are actually like right around New York City, and so if you want to go to one outside of New York City, you're kind of either going to go to Toronto, which is crazy, or I mean Montreal is going to be the closest one for a lot of people. You know, that would be like really weird going over the border to get repair.
Doesn't make sense.
So like basically all of upstate New York is a little bit screwed. And there's nothing in, upper Vermont, which is a very green area. I know Burlington is extremely eco-friendly. You probably saw when you were up there. And there's nothing in Maine. So, I mean...
Yeah, and there was a bunch of Tesla, too, in Burlington.
Right. And then, I don't think there's anything from, New Mexico to Montana. Oh, there's one in Colorado.
In Utah, too, in Salt Lake City. But, right. Yeah, I mean, the main thing I thought was weird about that is the fact that you call it a foolish oversight, but my understanding is that they didn't want too many new service centers because they were pushing the whole mobile repair thing that you just send people to repair your car wherever you are. So I thought, it wasn't a foolish oversight. They were just going with another solution, and now they are backtracking. I don't think they're backtracking. I think they're still delivered that they're going to keep the mobile service thing. But now they also want service center, which I think it's a no-brainer. It makes sense. But the 3 to 6 months things. I mean, I don't know how many they are thinking about. Is it going to be just...
I mean, maybe he's talking about mobile service command stations, where they the cars go at night or whatever. So maybe you can deploy one of those pretty quickly. You just send a bunch of parts out to some random small warehouse and get about 10 trucks and every day just go 30 miles and 50 miles or whatever.
Yeah, the thing is though, you also I think it's 80% of the normal the freaking repair that you can cover with the mobile service station. So you always still need that service center and the lift and everything for a few things. Tesla's also expanding its body part, not its body part, its body shops, and they're making their own body shops. So maybe they can combine those and open service centers and body shops at the same time.
That'd probably take another 2 or 3 months to get all that done.
Elon Musk can do it in 2 or 3 days.
Right.
Moving on from Tesla, though it's still very much Tesla related, there's a new hope for the EV federal tax credit in the U.S. So as we know, last year there was an attempt to shut it down. Then last month we talked, and it failed. Then there was that Democratic attempt to revive it, it's still there, but to remove the delivery cap of 200,000 delivery to initiate the phase out of the federal tax credit and replace it with a timeline instead. So every automaker, whatever the number of EVs they deliver, can still the buyers can still get the federal tax credit up to 10 years. That was the goal of the Democratic Party.
And there was two different congressmen, one from Vermont and one from Washington or Oregon or something?
I think it ramped up to a lot more than two, actually. I think they got a dozen or so backer for the deal. But because the Congress is controlled by the Republicans, it was never really taken seriously. But now a Republican is out with his own effort to remove the cap on the federal tax credit, which would be good for Tesla, which already hit the threshold to initiate the phase out, and GM was about to hit it. So his plan is to also replace it with a time limit instead, which would be 2022, so much shorter than what the Democrats were hoping for, but I think it makes a lot of sense. 2022 is reasonable, I think. I mean, by that point, by 2022, I think there's going to be so many EVs on the market, so many EV models option to buy from, that I think it wouldn't make any sense to buy anything else than an EV at that point. I think there's going to be 50 different EVs, different models available, so if you can find something that makes sense for you that's electric, I'd be very surprised. But yeah, so now people are trying to figure out what are the chances of that bill passing. So that's a senator. What's his name? Senator Dean Heller from Nevada.
Nevada. That sounds familiar. Why? Yeah. Why would he do it?
Is it because Tesla has a lot of influence in Nevada due to its Gigafactory 1 being there and having some weight politically in the state?
I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah, I don't think either. But he's a senator, so he introduced a bill in the Senate, but you also need a bill in the Congress. And earlier this week, there also was a sister bill being introduced in Congress.
It'd be great for it to go through. I think it would kind of, you know, for Americans, this is a U.S. kind of bill. The two companies that are about to expire are both U.S. companies, you know, facing competition from Germans and Japanese and whatnot. So, like, from that standpoint, it would make a lot of sense to continue to give discounts.
Yeah.
You know, as we've said a bunch of times, you know, that we don't think that this is the correct model. I think, you know, if you want to really fix things, you got to kind of tax carbon. And so I guess this is like a good second.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not going to tax carbon, then it makes sense. I completely understand where people come from. They said, you're just giving like free money to rich people because, of course, Tesla was the company that took the most advantage of it yet, since they're the one that reached a threshold first. But I get that. But if there's no carbon prices on gas-powered cars, then those cars are also being mispriced too at the moment, because the impact that they have on the environment is not being correctly priced. So for now, it's the best we have. And yeah, I mean, it makes sense for the Republican to get behind it, like you said, on a U.S. job perspective, because Tesla and GM are going to be most affected by it. It would even make sense on that front. I mean, from an EV enthusiast, I wanted to stay no matter what for the moment, like you said, as long as there's no carbon tax. But for purely like free market idea, if you're not going to pass that bill, it made more sense to remove the tax credit altogether, because the only people that are IP with the cap right now are, like you said, the German automakers, because they are the one that still going to have access. And the only reason why they're still going to have access is because they were late to the EV game. So that it makes no sense to encourage them to be late to the EV game. That said, I'm okay for them to have it anyway, even if that bill doesn't pass, because it's going to result in more EV on the roads, which is the ultimate goal. But I mean, just for a business perspective, from a market perspective, it makes no sense. Porsche, speaking of German automakers, the Taycan. Porsche was out this week with a press release saying that they are entering the electric era with the new Taycan. Taycan? How do you pronounce it again?
I don't know. It's like Taycan, I think. Like, yeah. It's been taken from you.
All right.
Or Taycan,
which is, of course, based on the Mission E concept, which we're seeing on the screen.
It's a beautiful car.
Oh, it's insanely beautiful, yeah.
So I don't think it's going to have nearly as much room inside, though, as a Model S.
Well, the concept was a four-seater instead of five-seater to start with. So, yeah, maybe the production, most likely the production one's going to be a five-seater, though. Or at least have an option for a five-seater. I don't know. But, yeah, so the news this week, they were talking about the production. They were making some progress in terms of production. They are currently converting the one production line at the main plant in Zuffenhausen, I think. It's their main factory in Germany, and now they call it building a factory within a factory to make that new car. They are creating 1,200 jobs there, and they are aiming for at least 20,000 units per year, but they could add another shift and ramp that up to 30,000 units per year potentially. And moving on from another news about the Taycan, in the US they had some event for the dealership in the US. And Porsche announced the dealers that they were going to be asking a little bit more out of them to build their giant network in the U.S. that we've been talking about already in preparation for the Taycan being released. They wanted the 500 station network with their ultra fast station to be able to deliver that 350 kilowatts of charging rates, which would make the taken the first car to be able to take that, the first passenger car to take that rate. So they said 500 before. Now they're seeing 700 stations. 200 of them are going to be paid for by the dealers. And it's going to cost $300,000 to $400,000 per dealer in the U.S.
That must have been a fun moment at the event when they're like, guess what? You're going to be spending $300,000 to $400,000 on this charging thing that you didn't probably want to do.
Yeah, but at the same time, if I'm understanding correctly, they're going to charge. It's not going to be like Tesla with a supercharger at first with the Model S and you don't pay anything or whatever. They're going to charge you every time you use the station. So it's going to be a revenue creating source, I think, unless Porsche take that revenue. But if they're charging dealership, I assume they're going to let the dealers have the revenue for those stations. And they said, oh, it's going to be like a few years. Zelmer, the CEO of Porsche North America, said he warned them that it's going to be a long-term investment. But then he talked about like 2 or 3 years payback time. Come on, it's not a long-term investment.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think you'll get a 2 or 3 year payback time, but I do think it is an incredibly important idea. Like whether the dealer should pay for it or Porsche, or maybe Porsche should subsidize it or something like that, whatever. It's a good idea to do. It's something that Chevy and all the other electric vehicle manufacturers should also do, is get those dealers on board with the DC fast charging. When I went to go pick up my Bolt, it had like, you know, I don't know, like 25% charge, and the guy, you know, nobody there knew how to charge it. So it was kind of a mess. If you have a fast charging station and people are trained up on it and people are actually using it, I think it changes the whole selling situation a lot.
But you know what I think too? If you make those guys pay the $300,000 to $400,000 per store, I think that's gonna incentivize them to get their money back and to actually sell the taken. And like explain, like, hey, come back and charge at our place too, like if you need
right.
whatever. So I think that's a good thing, really.
You got 15 minutes. They can upsell you on some Porsche gear and their little, they could have like a little cafe, maybe sell you some Starbucks.
Yeah, they have a ton of lifestyle accessories like Tesla.
Right.
And I think the Taycan is going to sell very well regardless. And we got a better idea of that this week when the program director confirmed at least an idea of the pricing for the Taycan, which we already knew pretty closely, but now, excuse me, he confirmed that it's going to be priced between the Cayenne and the Panamera, which should result in about $75,000 starting price, competitive with the Model S, really, the Tesla Model S. And there's still some it's a murky area, really, because he said that in Germany, and the Cayenne, of course, in Germany starts at, what does it start at? That's €74,000, and the Panamera €90,000. But of course, in Germany, they have to include the taxes in that price. So if we just forget about that and we look at the U.S. price of the Cayenne versus the Panamera, $62,000, $25,000 for the base price. So $75,000 would make sense. And it's also in line with previous unconfirmed reports from leaks that said that $75,000 will be the base price, but it also said that it would be three different performance trims, which the program director also confirmed. And the CFO of Porsche said that the top version could go up to €200,000.
But Porsche is notorious for that, selling a base model price that almost nobody will buy. Because if you're buying a Porsche, you want all the trims, and you know they make a few of the base model, and what they're really going to sell is the much more expensive ones.
Yeah, I mean, if you compare it to the Model S, which starts, I think, at $77,000, you can get it up to $150,000 with the P100D Ludacris and everything in it. So, I mean, $230,000, that's a lot more money. But, I think they're going to sell plenty of them at those prices. And I think they're going to get a bunch of Porsche gearhead, like hardcore petrolheads fans from Porsche to buy this car. So I think it's going to be a good car to... They think they're going after Tesla and everything, and probably they're going to be able to get a few still a few market share from Tesla with the car. Well, I think most of the sales are going to come to just Porsche Ultra fans that wouldn't never buy a Tesla anyway, and now they're going to have an electric option. So I think that's great.
I agree. And I think that's why they have to make it, because a lot of their fans are like, hey, I want to go electric. I would rather buy an electric Porsche, but, you know, they're not making one yet.
Yeah, and a few of those ended up buying a Tesla, but many of them, I think, just ended up sticking to Porsche anyway. So now they're going to be able to. And they're going to have a few options, not just the Taycan that we've seen based on the middle, the Mission E, which was, of course, like a sports sedan. They're going to get also this, they call it a GT, a Gran Turismo. I mean, I have a tough time trying to describe the car. Like, some say it's the station wagon. I saw Porsche also mentioning, like, a CUV. I mean, it's in between those. I think it's so low. It looks almost like a sedan, but it has, like, a much bigger hatchback. I think a station wagon is fair, really, but a very aggressive-looking station wagon for sure. We're talking about the Mission E Gran Turismo concept that they unveiled this year. Yesterday, it was officially greenlit for production. So Porsche is bringing the car to production. I haven't confirmed a timeline, really, but I assume it's going to be right after the sedan version of the car. It's going to feature the same specs and the same powertrain. So
yeah, I mean, it's basically the same powertrain with the slightly higher and further back cabin, back. Right?
Yeah. So a little bit more storage space.
So Model S and Model X a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's... maybe I'd be surprised if this version actually has... It's very... Like, it's the same cargo capacity as the Model S.
Right.
Model
right.
X has a lot of cargo capacity. I mean, you know it. I think it's going to be closer to the Model S than to Model X.
Yeah, I mean, even this one is only a four-seater.
Yeah, the concept, yeah. Well, for sure, it's going to be a five-seater, though, for the production version.
Yep.
And, yeah, the same spec. So, basically, Porsche has invested a lot in the powertrain of the Taycan, and they are leveraging it now to make different models. So, we know the sedan one. Now, there's this one, a CUV or station wagon or whatever. And we also know of the Audi GT e-tron, the e-tron GT, whatever, which is going to be like a sports sedan closer to the Taycan. It's also going to use the same platform as the Taycan. So they're very leveraging a lot of the development work for the Taycan on other vehicles. Finally, we're going to leave you with the Jaguar I-Pace. So a quick mention this week. We've been talking about the I-Pace for a while. First deliveries in the U.S.
Looks like a nice family.
A nice family from Florida. And with the announcement of the first delivery, they released sort of a Q&A with the first owner in North America. And what came out for me, like, he bashed Tesla a few times in the Q&A, which was weird, but I sort of overlooked that because that's not a big issue with me.
I think they were kind of leading him to that.
Yeah, I think Porsche wanted that to put up Jaguar, and that's why it was included. But what I find the most interesting about it is that, like we were just talking about with Porsche, the guy was a super Jaguar fan. I think that's his sixth or seventh Jaguar at this point. So that's a guy that was willing to go electric, but he was waiting for his main brand to go electric before he could do it himself. Which is, it's a weird thing in the auto industry, the sort of ultra loyalty that people have for brands. So that's an example of it. So that's why more legacy automakers, I think, needs to go electric.
Yeah, it is a strange thing.
And now that they're doing the deliveries in North America, I think we should get some review units. I mean, let's take it.
Yeah, I mean,
you had a drive in it, but you have like very controlled drive with PR for a few days.
Yeah, it would be nice to get. It would be nice to get the Porsche as well, both of the Porsches, and also an Audi. We need to start making some phone calls.
Yeah, we need the e-tron. We need. I saw a bunch of people getting the Kona to check with the PR in Canada. They couldn't get one apparently.
Yeah, there was a West Coast Kona thing.
Might be it. Well, I'm gonna be in in Los Angeles for the first 3 months of the year next year. So I'm going to start trying to line up a few review units there and be able to test out a few cars. So if you guys know any contacts there that can help me out, get a few cars to review while I'm there. If not, we can also like get sooner, too. That's fine, too, with me. But, yeah, we're going to try to line up a few reviews for you because the EV market is certainly expanding fast right now. So that's pretty much it for this week. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching for YouTube. You can subscribe to get our new videos. We're going to have a bunch of new videos coming to the electric channels soon. I'm going to make more. We'll also have new people getting more videos for the channel. Also, you all already know Micah from the Paris trip. If you like personal electric vehicle stuff, he's your guy and he's posting on the channel. And thanks a lot again for watching and listening. We're going to see you next time. Same time next week. Bye-bye.